Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Vikings Happy Hour. Tonight, we're breaking down last week's victory over the Detroit Lions with Matthew Caller from Purple Insider. And if enough time is around, we will start breaking down the Vikings versus the Saints in London. So grab your Lake Monster beer and enjoy the show.
Welcome to Vikings Happy Hour, where we mix our favorite beverage and talk of your Minnesota Vikings. Skol!
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Vikings Happy Hour. I'm your host, Matt Anderson, joined alongside my co-host, Ryan Ortega, and producer, Dave. Like every week here on Vikings Happy Hour, this show is sponsored by Lake Monster Brewing in St. Paul, Minnesota. I almost said Minneapolis. St. Paul, Minnesota. It's still pretty nice out for fall weather, and they have some heaters out there. So if you're in the Twin Cities, be sure to head over there and grab your Oktoberfest for this fall. I hear that is a great one, though I have yet to try it. As I mentioned in the pre-show tonight, graciously enough, joining us is Matthew Caller of Purple Insider. Matthew, how are you?
I am doing well, guys. I'm doing well. I think the difference between being 2-1 and 1-2 for these fans has had a big effect, because I feel like my mentions on Twitter have not been on fire this week, which I think would be a little bit different if they were 1-2.
Yeah, well, I know that we don't have a whole lot of time with you this evening, so I want to just dive right in and get your thoughts on last Sunday's victory, which was a very narrow victory. There's a lot of things that we can point to in that game. I think the Lions kind of gave us a couple breaks as well, especially when I think about Dan Campbell calling a timeout, you know, on that final drive. But what are your thoughts about the victory on Sunday for the Vikings?
Yeah, I think that Kirk Cousins and Kevin O'Connell addressed it well by not celebrating too much over that win. I mean, in the locker room, of course they should. After an intense victory, they should have a big victory speech and everyone should be happy. But then when they come out for the press conferences and they have to be real a little bit, it's like, okay, we got outplayed during that game and there's a lot to fix. I mean, there's a lot, even if you just look at the box score and didn't even see how it went and you didn't see the number of tense conversations going on the sideline and things like that during the game, and you only just looked at Kirk Cousins' yards per attempt, Justin Jefferson, 3 receptions in the game on 6 targets, and things like that. There was plenty of reason, and not only that, but the yardage that Detroit put up, both through the passing game and on the air, or through the air. And then you look at, they did a good job on third downs, but not a great job on fourth downs, except for at the very end. They were given an early Christmas gift by Dan Campbell, because even if he punts the ball away, that's a better option for Dan Campbell than to have them kick that long and unlikely to be made field goal. So there's a lot of reasons to sit here and say that in the big picture, 2-1 is really good for this team. In fact, if you looked at those first 3 opponents, I think a lot of us probably would have picked 2-1. And I know that I did, and this might be the first time I've ever picked the first 3 games, or maybe even 3 games in a row correctly, but this is where I thought they would be. But from the micro, there's a lot to put under a microscope for this team in the week leading up to their game against New Orleans and say, if that continues, you're going to lose some of those games rather than win at the last second like they did against Detroit.
Yeah, I agree, sorry, Matt. You know, I take a look at, you know, the game, and I guess my perspective here a little bit is just that you got to beat those teams, right? You got to beat the teams that you're supposed to beat. And traditionally over the last couple of years, we haven't been able to, or, you know, we squeak by 1 here, 2 here. But like, again, Detroit last year, we lost to them in the second game of the year against them. And to be able to, I guess, claw our way back after playing so poorly, I think, in the first three quarters was, I think, a positive sign. But the first three quarters was just like, what are we doing on defense? What are we, what, you know, and a lot of people want to call out O'Connell's play calling and whatnot. I just watched back that game earlier today while I was working, and you could definitely tell that there was, they were schemed open. There was plays to be made that just weren't being made. Do you have any more insights into that? The play calling, was it actually working? We just missed the plays, or am I off base here a little bit with what I saw in terms of, you know, what were we just not calling the right plays?
Yeah, I think that evaluating whether someone is doing the right things with play calling is probably one of the toughest things to do from the outside. It might even be one of the toughest things to do from inside the building, because like you said, I mean, you can look on that tape and you can say, oh, well, I see this guy open or this guy's open. And maybe if you're a coach, you could say, hey, there was opportunities to be had. Why weren't you delivering the football? But the players might be saying, well, that wasn't the read, or that wasn't how I understood the read, or where someone was supposed to be lined up, or a number of different things that could result in that. I do think that in back-to-back weeks, teams playing Justin Jefferson the way that they did is a pretty big factor. To put somebody on him right on the line of scrimmage and then have him bracketed with a safety for essentially that entire game. I don't know. Maybe they didn't expect that from the way that Detroit had previously played defense. And they mentioned after the game, they said, like, yeah, we saw some things in Detroit that were much different than anything that we had prepared for. And I think that might be what it references. I also think that when you have a new offense that is much more complicated than the offense before, the one that everybody was really fluent in, considering you have mostly the same players on offense, and then they all had to learn something new, there's bound to be bumps in the road. The thing is that the Vikings can't really afford that for a team that brought back Kirk Cousins and wants to go to the playoffs and set the standard at returning to the postseason and being a legitimate contender. If they don't make that play to KJ Osborne, we are really talking about, like, what is going on? How are they going to fix this? They're in a big hole. It's amazing how one game can really swing things in the NFL, because now I think there is some room for error a little bit, but you also don't want to see week after week Kirk Cousins having to call a timeout because people can't figure out where they're supposed to be lined up. And I thought on a number of occasions, it looked like Kirk Cousins wasn't exactly sure or wasn't really definitive with his actions about where he was going to go with the football, because that was a good offensive line performance. I thought he had plenty of time to throw on a bunch of occasions. And there were times where it looked like, well, this, I'm just not seeing what I thought I was going to see, and now I'm going to throw it away or hold the ball too long. I think it's really telling that Cousins has held the ball for a long time, yet his average depth of target is not very far, which I think sort of tells you either that he hasn't made an adjustment to the offense or to what defenses are doing so far, and trying to separate the quarterback's role in this along with, like, the play calling and how the offense was taught and how everyone understands it and the adjustments they have to make, I think it's very difficult. I mean, because in this game, they were running bootlegs and things like that with C.J. Ham out there and a tight end, and they were doing some things that actually looked very Kubiak-like in that game that maybe were to help Cousins try to feel a little bit more comfortable with where he was supposed to go with the ball. And still, it seemed like there was a lot of, I'm going to throw it to Ham. I'm going to throw it to Johnny Munt. I'm a little more comfortable with these throws. And I also felt like there were times when I watched the game back where he would hit the back foot, and I thought, if the ball comes out right here, there's a possibility for a guy to make a big catch, but the ball didn't come out, and then it ended up going somewhere else. And I don't know if that's just Cousins being Cousins, because he does have a tendency to do that at times and not be definitive and check it down and things like that, or if that's not the receiver not being where he thought he was going to be, or the coverage not where he thought he was going to be. I mean, the bottom line is, whatever explanation fits, it needs to be resolved. It needs to be resolved quickly against New Orleans, because if you win this game, I mean, you feel really good about the beginning of the season. If you don't, you're much more looking at going into the bye at probably 500.
Yeah. I want to go back to one of your comments, because we talked about how teams are trying to take Justin Jefferson out of the equation. Obviously, KJ Osborne last season stepped up in a big way to pretty much, you know, make his mark on wide receiver three. Adam Thielen is Adam Thielen, though he is aging. But the question I wanted to ask you tonight is, do you have any concerns with Irv Smith? Because he's obviously made some pretty key catches. He had that touchdown in Philadelphia, and then I think he made a really good sideline catch last week. But he's also had some drops, and I don't know if it's just him not being, not playing football for a year coming off of that that meniscus injury, or if this is really who Irv Smith is, and we can't really rely on him.
Yeah, I think with the offensive line playing halfway decently so far, that Irv Smith has become the favorite whipping boy of all Vikings fans on Twitter. I think it's fair for the way that he's played so far. I mean, there was one play in particular where they double-teamed Justin Jefferson. There was no throw to be made. It was just great coverage from Jeff Okuda. The safety's over the top. So Cousins just kind of flips the ball to Irv Smith, and the flip is perfectly accurate, and Smith just can't bring it in. And those are the balls that you expect him to be able to bring in. But it isn't just that he missed the year with the meniscus. He also missed almost all of training camp, all of the full speed reps. He couldn't take any of them. And in previous years, for players that I've seen miss that much of training camp, it's been a big deal. Latavius Murray was a good example in 2017. He missed almost all of training camp. And for maybe the first 4 or 5 weeks until he had a kind of a breakout game, he looked like he was running in mud. And then all of a sudden it came back to him. So I think that we have enough of a sample size on Irv Smith Jr., whether it was the training camp from last year heading into the season or his first couple of seasons, to suggest that he's better than this and that he can be a tight end one. I think that if I'm ranking, like, are you concerned about whatever, I'm not really willing to put that one at the top yet until I see more and more. And I think it's fair for Kevin O'Connell and Wes Phillips to use Johnny Munt and use Ben Ellefson until Irv Smith is really 100%, because he does not look like the Irv Smith that I was expecting to see. But also, I think when you understand the circumstances, I think it will get better as the season goes along. I think it's probably more Thielen that I would be looking at and wondering, are teams deciding we're just not going to take him seriously anymore, and putting everything on Justin Jefferson? Because that's what it looks like. And I think that if they do that and Thielen can't make them pay, that it will be a long year. Because Kirk Cousins is not the type of quarterback who's going to say, double team, who cares? That's just not Kirk Cousins. It never will be. And I think that maybe, you know, if you're comparing, people like to compare him and Matthew Stafford. Like, that's the difference between them, right, is that Stafford has the arm and the mentality to just throw it anyway. And that has never been who Kirk Cousins is. But he's always had, if Diggs is doubled or Jefferson is doubled, he's always had Adam Thielen there beating one-on-one coverage and being the guy he could rely on. So I haven't looked super, super close at Thielen and all of his routes to decide kind of what I think of that yet. I want to give it a bigger sample size. But if we continue like this and good games for Adam Thielen are like 60 yards, then we're going to have to start asking, like, is this going to be something that they have to make an adaptation to figure out? The other thing, too, is that, you know, last year, KJ Osborne was really, really effective as the slot receiver. And he was kind of a pure slot receiver. You look at his numbers when he was in the slot versus outside, they're way, way better. Are they doing the same things or not? Because at least at this moment, it looks like Osborne's running a lot of downfield routes. And I think that he is more of a get the ball in his hands and makes plays guy. And I wonder if that's just Kevin O'Connell kind of figuring out where everybody is. I mean, it is a long season, but it kind of happens fast, right? For the coaching staff, they have to make adjustments pretty quickly. And I think this week that kind of starts of maybe a little bit of splash of cold water. Like, okay, it's 2 weeks in a row where the offense wasn't that effective. You have to figure out why.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, I was sitting at the game on Sunday, and to your point, right, you're literally watching them double team Justin Jefferson every single time in one fashion or another, and you're watching the routes of the other two main receivers that we have on the team. And again, I'm watching from the stands, right? So, you know, I'm doing my best to kind of keep tabs on everyone. Thielen seemed like he was winning some of those reps and either just wasn't getting the look because he was last in the progression or not, or he's having to win with jump ball, you know, 50-50 balls. And again, to your point, that's just not Kirk Cousins' game. Like, if you're not open, like wide open, he doesn't necessarily want to throw that ball. So luckily, Adam did make a bunch of really difficult plays, you know, difficult catches and whatnot this game. KJ Osborne, that huge one before the touchdown, I was surprised Kirk threw that ball. I was like, what are you doing? Because it looked like it was going right into double coverage, but I didn't really see the configuration of how, you know, the safety was going to be moving up with Jefferson and stuff at the time. So, again, good play design, but it's just kind of interesting. We really need those other two to step up. We've been calling for it that, you know, we need probably to bring in the heir apparent to Thielen, and we – to your point, we might be a year too late. Like, we might have waited one year too long.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely won't go I told you so yet on that. But it has been a thing that we've wondered about. Like, the Los Angeles Rams are a good example, and they're kind of the team that we have to, because of the connections, compare the Vikings to. The Rams always said, one more receiver. And the Vikings' one more receiver answer was... gosh, who was the guy that they cut in training camp that basically never played? The veteran.
Albert Wilson.
Albert Wilson. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then, you know, the internet's favorite wide receiver, Amir Smith-Marset, but he was probably never going to be a difference maker there. I mean, that's not like drafting someone in the first or second round, a wide receiver who could be that extra guy if Thielen, you know, doesn't have 100% of what he used to. And I think that you see, like you mentioned, there were two plays in particular where he made very, very high difficulty catches. And I think that his ability to catch the football is still 100% of what it was. Kind of reminds me of maybe like Larry Fitzgerald in his older age, where they had to run mm-hmm. him underneath, run him out of the slot, and he was still effective. But I think if you're Kevin O'Connell and you're just learning about these players, I mean, maybe your whole plan was built around him winning on the outside and being that next guy in the progression, as you mentioned, next to Jefferson. And now there just has to be some adjustments. But you can't put everybody in the slot. I mean, that's the thing, is like we're saying Osborne needs to be in the slot. Thielen needs to be in the slot. Jefferson needs to move around more and be in the slot. Like, well, they're going to have to figure out that balance, right? And how can you take advantage of, if you have a Marshawn Lattimore who's following you into the slot, well, what can you do in other areas of the field to take advantage of that? And, you know, maybe some of it does have to be going back to some of those bootlegs and play actions. And it was kind of clear to me, you know, when I looked back on it on film, like they pulled out the Gary. They pulled out that Gary stuff and they started running some boots. And I think that should have always kind of been the plan. But I totally understand why Kevin O'Connell would say, let's throw them the whole thing and then pair it back, rather than me trying to copy what Gary did and what Clint did and what Kevin Stefanski did. So I think that there's certainly reasons with this offense to be like, is this going to be what people wanted it to be in imagination land when they thought, oh, Cousins can win MVP and this will be just the top five offense? Like, I don't think it was ever going to be that. But I think this is one where it has the potential to grow quite a bit from where it is. And that kind of, you know, dials back to the win and how important the win is. Because if they didn't get that win, then we'd be saying it's desperation time to figure that out. And you got to do it now. Without the win, even if you don't beat the Saints, it's like, well, you're 500, you got Chicago. Miami's going to be extremely tough, especially in Miami. But if you go into the bye at 500 in the NFC the way it is now, it's not a complete disaster, right? And you can still feel like long season, plenty of time to go. So I think that this is all kind of part of a process that we have not seen in a long time, because it's just been Zimmer. And since 2019, it's just been hand off to Delvin and run the boots. And so now we're seeing kind of in real time, a new coach, an offensive mind, try to solve these problems that have been created. And I think part of it is maybe him discovering that, you know, some guys' reputations from years past aren't exactly who they are now, and there's going to have to be adjustments to that.
Matt, you like playing chess. I sort of view this as we now have a new guy playing chess in Kevin O'Connell. he's now trying to get a feel on how to use his pieces to better win football games. And we're still in the process of that learning as he spins up to get the tournament ready, if you want to call it that.
Yeah. And so the way that it works in chess is you prepare openings, basically, like in the same way that you prepare your first 15 plays in the NFL. So you prepare, but then you have to be ready to adapt at a moment's notice in chess when the opponent does something that's different from the, they call it a line, but from the line, like if I do this move and they do something that I didn't expect, well, now I have to adapt. And usually what that results in a chess tournament is you see the person really slow down their pace and really think deeply about what I have to do here. And that's kind of like Kevin O'Connell, don't sleep on the plane, my friend. You got to think deeply about how you're going to solve some of these problems. And I don't know that I have like a clear answer. I mean, because we have often said, well, if you believe in Kirk more, then you will get rewarded more. If you lean into the passing game, if you run guys in motion more, if you do all these kind of modern things. But then I think we also need to respect Gary Kubiak's history and know that, you know, Gary was not a fool. I mean, he made a lot of quarterbacks look good. I think that he understood some of the things that are strengths and weaknesses of Kirk Cousins, and he understood them really, really well. That, you know, that one play to Ben Ellefson is a great example. And of course, everyone goes, oh man, he threw it to Ben Ellefson. But like, he runs a play action there, and there's a little bit of pressure, but it's not a ton. And you've got your three levels. You have Justin Jefferson coming underneath. You got Ellefson in the intermediate, and then somebody else was running deep. Maybe it was Thielen. And Cousins makes the right read and really makes a terrific throw. And it gets a first down. It's like, he knows how to do those things. He is so good at those. I don't know if he's great at sitting back in the shotgun all the time and just directing traffic and changing protections and doing all these types of things. Like, I don't think that you necessarily want him looking like he's Warren Moon in the run and shoot and just the guy who's in complete command of the entire offense. I think you do have to have training wheels to some extent to get the most out of him and then, you know, take advantage of the chances that you get. So I think that like there's a lot of maybe people coming to grips a little bit with reality that the last coaching staff wasn't completely foolish. And maybe Kevin O'Connell is one of those people who's recognizing that. But also, the opportunities are absolutely there to still have a really good season on offense. I think it's just that the idea that they were going to have this like magical new age offense that all defenses were going, what? Like the Kazoo Kid, if you ever have seen that, that GIF on Twitter. But like, I don't think that's going to be what this is. That doesn't mean they can't be better, and it doesn't mean they can't make the playoffs and be really competitive. I just think that they're sort of realizing there are some things we have to dial back, and maybe this has to look a little more like the Jared Goff version of the Rams offense than the Matthew Stafford version.
Sure.
I know you only have a few minutes left with us, so I'm going to spam you with like five questions, and then you can whip them all off. So the first one, and I saw it in the chat there, earlier on, are you going to London for the game this weekend?
By the way, the reason I got to run real quick is because my wife is calling volleyball, Minnesota Gophers volleyball on Big Ten Network. So,
oh,
successful
fantastic.
Wife guy over here. Yeah.
that's actually really cool. I might have to turn on the Big Ten then and take a listen after the show. Are you going to London? What are your thoughts on Dalvin Cook potentially trying to play through this shoulder injury, and should they potentially rest him? What are your thoughts on the Vikings game this weekend? And then just hit us with a score prediction, and we'll release you.
Okay, so I'm not going to London. And the reason why is a guy who works for me, Jonathan Harrison, who works as a producer for Purple Insider, is a huge soccer guy. He works for Minnesota United, and this is like a dream trip for him. So he said, what do you think about me going and covering the game? And I was like, let's do it, man. That's awesome. So he's going to go to the Manchester That's United cool. Stadium. He's going to go to a soccer game over there. And then he's going to cover the game. So I will sit home and maybe potentially go see Mahomes and Brady at US Bank Stadium. that looks like it's really like could happen. And if that happens, I'm going. You know, that'll work out for everybody, but he'll be over there. So I've got my Purple Insider correspondent. I don't think Dalvin Cook should play. because Alexander Mattison is solid. And because if you hurt Dalvin Cook more, it's just going to be the same story with him where we're talking about, well, Dalvin was great when he was not hurt and then, you know, struggled after a while. And as far as how this game ends up playing out, I think it really depends on whether Andy Dalton or Jameis Winston plays. If Jameis Winston plays, I will pick the Vikings to win by 17 points. If Andy Dalton plays, I don't know. Like, I give me a coin flip. Because part of the reason is because this Ed Donatell defense is asking the opposing quarterback, can you complete 5, 6, 7 passes in a row, short throws? And I think the answer for Andy Dalton is actually yes. I do not think that Jameis Winston could throw 40 passes without throwing 3 interceptions. But I think that Dalton is kind of built for that. It's just like get the ball to his playmakers, throw it underneath, and hit one big play. I mean, they honestly beat the Vikings with that exact same strategy when he was playing for the Dallas Cowboys. So I think that that is much more of a coin flip. And if I were to – so I'll give you the two different predictions. If Jameis Winston plays, I think the Vikings win 28-10. And if Andy Dalton plays, I still think the Vikings win, but I'm going to say much more like 24-21. I think it will be close. We'll see. I mean, Winston talking today, he had 4 different injuries. So not only is the guy an interception machine to begin with, but playing through 4 injuries. I mean, I think that they should be leaning heavily toward Andy Dalton, but that's 2 different things for me.
They also might be down to their 2 wide receivers. I heard that Landry and Michael Thomas were both did not practice today. So I think that's another thing that the Vikings fans can keep an eye on.
Yeah, and with Za'Darius Smith not practicing, that kind of raises an eyebrow a little bit there too as well. Like, is that going to be a thing? Because if Andy Dalton plays, you have to pressure him. And who's going to do that, like, aside from Danielle Hunter? Because they're clearly not going to play a defense that's going to blitz all the time. So I think that, you know, this is a matchup of a Vikings offense that needs some solutions versus a New Orleans defense that's pretty legit, but a New Orleans offense that does not have any solutions, really, without those wide receivers, and a defense for the Vikings that's, you know, giving up a ton of yards. So, I think it is a fairly close matchup. And really, overall, it's a team last year that went 9-8 versus a team last year went 8-9. And 2 teams that could be battling at the end of the day in not that hard of divisions, I guess, for playoff spots. So this one could end up being big.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch it. I think it'll set the tone for the next few weeks, depending on what the outcome is. And Viking fans will likely panic on a loss, but then feel a little overconfident if they win. So before we let you go, anything you're working on over at Purple Insider that you want to share?
I mean, the usual stuff. I see that you put the little logo at the bottom there. I did just launch a new show called Hot Routes with a Z, because there were other shows named Hot Routes, and because I grew up in the 90s and all the rappers spelled stuff with Z's. I launched a new show just because I couldn't talk enough about football. So that one's more focused on the rest of the league. But yeah, I mean, we'll be covering it. And I just talked to a bunch of linemen today about Brian O'Neill's ability to recover when he gets beat. So that's something that I'm going to be putting out a little later in the week that I'm excited about, because asking offensive linemen about technical stuff is great because they're the only ones in the world that understand it. So you guys can look forward to that one.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm very excited. So, well, thank you. Thank you very much for hopping on for a short half hour. We'll have to get you back on again later this season, if time allows. So thank you.
Thanks, guys. Matt. Appreciate having me.
Mm-hmm. For everybody still here, you can follow Matthew Coller on Twitter if you're not already, at Matthew Coller. And follow his work on Purple Insider. It's great stuff, very detailed, and I am very excited to hear about that Hot Routes episode with the offensive
really cool,
lineman.
Actually.
I love seeing like players' perspectives. You know, anybody can just grab a mic like you and I and just sit up here and talk. It's just a little bit of prep that goes into that, but to get a player's perspective who's lived it for as long as they have and been in that grind, you know, that stuff should cost money, but
That was really cool about our episode last week, where you know we had Glover Quinn on, and honestly, it went a different route than maybe I initially predicted when we said we were going to book him. In terms of we did go into a bunch of kind of technical stuff, the differences between the 4-3 and 3-4, but not just the baseline differences. I think most of us understand the baseline, but like the nuance of how that changes the inside linebacker's mentality, the outside linebacker's mentality, the safety and everything like that. So it was really insightful. So if you're interested in hearing a little bit more about that kind of stuff and didn't catch last week's episode, I do recommend you go check it out. It was Vikings Happy Hour last week before the Lions game with Glover Quinn.
Well, and you talk about line play. Matthew has on every Tuesday Jeremiah Searles, and they specifically talk line play. And he took that from when he was in Score North, right? They used to do it there, and Score North has continued it as well. And if you like line play like I do, it's you mark your week with it as to explain, and hey, this is what this guy's doing. This is, you know, hey, maybe Ed Ingram overset on this one. This can be fixed, you know, blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah. And they go into some of the techniques about it on how the blocking, if they form a wall, if they do this, if they're double teaming, and you get to learn how that play is so important, how to better watch the football game, because you can appreciate it. Because you'll catch glimpses of it and go, oh, I know exactly what he's doing. That's cool. Check that out. You know, we all love the big pancake blocks, right? Because they're great. But you can see the whole offensive line work together and you go, wow, this 2022 season, they're working together better. We've got a nice young rookie, Ezra Cleveland's doing well. We got two tackles that are playing Pro Bowl level type football, you know.
Very good stuff. While I have everybody, before we transition to our continued coverage of the Vikings here, thank you last week, Ryan, for hosting in my absence. The show was great, so if you guys missed it, please go check it out. And while you're over there on Climbing the Pockets YouTube page, make sure you like, subscribe, turn on notifications when we go live. We're here every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Central Time. I feel like I kind of know your thoughts, Ryan, on the Lions game, so I'm not going to linger on it too much longer. I think we'll just move forward to the Saints game this week. I think Matthew did a great recap of the two potential scenarios that we could see this weekend if the Saints start Jameis Winston or if the Saints start Andy Dalton. Is there any other thing that you are looking for in this upcoming game that fans should, you know, keep an eye on?
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight we break down who will be cutting. Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack-It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smartfood, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4-3-2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Yeah. Before we do that, I do just want to say one thing about the Lions is, yes, it was a close game. Yes, we played poorly. But I do want to give credit where credit's due. The Lions are a good team. Like, this isn't the Lions of, like, the whipping boy Lions anymore. Like, this isn't going to be an easy out for us going forward.
That's not
forward.
The Bears.
It's not, like, the Bears, I mean, even the Bears this year are even putting up, you know, you know, they're 2-1 actually. They're the same. Yeah. they're the same record as us. But like, yes, we should be able to handle the Bears relatively easy. But this isn't the same Lions team of old, right? So let's give a little respect to the fact that we did win this game. That team plays hard, and that culture there is turning into more of this, like, we're gonna grind this out every week. And yes, Dan Campbell probably lost that game for them, just with the over aggressiveness that he took in his play calling and his decisions. But to be able to persevere and overcome a bad, like I said, basically two quarters for sure. We were bad first quarter, we were bad third quarter. Mm-hmm. And we were able to overcome that and come in and win that game. I think, again, I'm not sitting here like overly celebratory on this, but I am happy that we were able to pull that out, because I think that is a quality win. Not a great win, but a quality win. To your question on the Saints and key matchups maybe to look for outside of, you know, the quarterback situation. Again, their defense is quite strong. Cameron Jordan over the years has been a havoc for not just against us, but just the league in general. But this is the first time in I don't know how many years, maybe since Phil Loadholt was playing, that I'm like not worried about any pass rush at this point in time right now. And of course, yes. I mean, maybe if there's like some elite internal defensive lineman that's on the other side, yeah, I'm still not 100% confident internally. But on the bookends, these DNs, Cam Jordan and Joey Bosa and Nick Bosa, and you know all these guys. Yes, we need to respect them, and yes, they're going to get our number here and there. But I'm not sitting here saying like, God, we really need to like worry about like chipping these guys. We need to really worry about getting a good pass blocking running back in there, right? A pass protection running back. Like I think that they can hold their own. And if they can't, I think, you know, we're sitting in a better, I think a little bit of a better Kirk Cousins right now, where he's able to realize that, understand it, and navigate his way around it, whether that's a throwaway, a dump off, or again, escaping and make the play downfield. So yeah. So that's something to look at. Of course, the secondary matchup's always a tough one against the Saints. They got a pretty legit secondary, especially Marshawn Lattimore, who is going to travel with Justin Jefferson. So can Justin Jefferson get this like pseudo yips off his back? I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say, yeah, sure, he's getting open at times, and yes, he is getting double covered at times. He's dropping passes too. Like, I'm not going to sit here. I know he's our superstar, and it should all be rainbows and sunshine with him, but he's dropping passes and he's making mental errors, and he needs to get these quote unquote yips out of the way and start delivering on some tough 50-50 balls, because he hasn't been doing that over the last 2 weeks.
So it's funny that you bring that up, because I wasn't necessarily going to talk about it. I thought about maybe making a tweet about it, because people were talking about like how Okuda like shut Jefferson down. And I'm not saying that Okuda didn't play well last weekend against Jefferson, because he absolutely did. But we saw this with Jefferson last year too, early on in the season, just some small mental mistakes. I remember sitting on the show with you asking you, Ryan, if we should be concerned about Justin Jefferson in like his drops, because they did happen pretty frequently early on in the first, you know, 2-3 games last year. So maybe it's just a, you know, early season butterflies type of a thing. I know Kevin O'Connell had to sit down and kind of talk with him last week to be like, hey, you know what, when you're this good, this is the kind of attention you're going to get, and we're just going to have to keep working through it. Doesn't mean you're not a talented receiver. It just means that teams are going to try and take you out of the ball game. But I do wonder if we see him turn a corner here, and maybe 2 weeks of consecutive, you know, underperforming games for Justin Jefferson will make him turn the corner a little bit faster, I should say.
Yeah. I mean, he started the year on a tough stretch too. I mean, if you think about number one corners, Jeff Okuda, he hasn't been anything yet in his NFL career because of injuries and being in the doghouse and whatnot. But, you know, he was highly touted. I mean, he was a top seven pick or something like that for the Lions. So he was a top 10 for sure. And then, you know, you had Jaire Alexander. I know he didn't travel with him, but you had Jaire Alexander, and then Darius Slay, and then now you're going into Marshawn Lattimore. So, I mean, you're not talking scrubs here. Like, you got quality corners that he's going up against, and this is how you prove you're the best receiver in the NFL. If he wants to continue to prove that, he's got to put up against these big-time receivers. And again, I know it's not just these guys. They got safety coverage over top almost every single time. So that does make a huge difference. But hey, if you're commanding double team every single time you're running routes, you're doing something right.
Yeah. Yep. Triple teams at times. I mean,
yeah,
there were a few different instances in last week's game where it was just like, wow, they are really going to make sure that Justin Jefferson does not get this ball, which I guess made me a little disappointed that there weren't better results when you got three defenders circulating one player on your team if you can't find the opening. Slightly concerning, but to Matthew Coller's credit, or to Matthew Coller's point, I should say, it's a new offense, and I think it's just going to take this team a little bit to get rolling, but I think they dodged a bullet by winning this last week.
I thought they were gutsy by winning, because they didn't.
The Vikings?
Yeah, they kept fighting until the end. And that's
that what I hate to see.
Yeah. They got hit in the face, and then they came back swinging. And they got hit in the face again, and they refused to go down, and they came back swinging until they delivered the knockout blow late. That's what I want to see attitude-wise from the team as a whole, and that's what we got. That is a good sign for the rest of the season.
I mean, you look at the boxing terminology, right? They took those blows, and they took those blows, and then they countered and countered, took some more. And again, you got to remember, like, I mean, it is a very emotional game, right? So when you get a team on fourth and three, and you're thinking you're coming off the field, and they go for it. You know, I think the first one they went for was like fourth and six, and they convert, right? That was the first time they scored. And then the next time around, fourth and two, they convert. Fourth and one, they come. I mean, hey, like that mentally, that messes with your mind. So for them to have that mental toughness to get through that, and again, late in game, now you're having these fourth and ones and you're stopping them when you have no other choice. Like if you don't stop them, game's over. And they're able to do that, get the ball back, score, able to do that, hold them to a missed field goal and score, right? Like that was absolutely, it was great to see that perseverance.
Yeah. We asked Matthew Coller this, and this will kind of be the last topic about this week's game, because I feel like he did a good summary, and then we'll hop into lightning round. But we asked Matthew Coller this question. I also posted an article earlier today on Climbing the Pocket about Dalvin Cook and his injury with his shoulder. We've seen this injury twice before, once back in 2019 and once last year. He's been able to play through it, you know, fine, I guess. I mean, there's definitely instances in those games that he's battling through it where he'll need to come out. He's wincing. Sometimes he doesn't finish the game. Sometimes he comes back. It's kind of a crapshoot. But I want to get your thoughts.
Games is lower. If you
what'd you say, Dave?
His production yards per carry, it drops.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
When he plays with that, with the it's a labrum or whatever. He's got an injured labrum, and his shoulder pops out of joint, partially pops out of joint. And the only way to fix it is through surgery. And he's never gotten the surgery. It's a ligament deal. And so it's painful, but he can hold it, especially with a brace to keep it in there. But generally when he does, his production goes down because one, he likes to get physical as we saw, right? Mm-hmm. And if he knows it's going to hurt, if he drives that right shoulder into it, he's not going to drive that right shoulder. And he gives up. And that's the debate is, do you let him play even though you know he'll say, yeah, put on a brace, shoot it up if you have to, whatever, I'm good to go, I want to play. Or do you put in Alexander Mattison, who seems to be playing his best football this year, which has surprised me, and just let Cook rest.
Yeah. So Ryan, based off those comments, what do you think? Do you think Cook should play this weekend? When do you think, we asked this on Vikings Hot Takes last night too, but when do you think Cook should come back? or when should the Vikings allow him to?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough call. I'm not one to say, hey, you know, sit this guy if he feels like he can play and play well, right? I mean, obviously, you got to be able to protect these guys from themselves at times, especially when it comes to, like, concussions and things like that. But, yeah, Madison's playing well, and we saw Ty Chandler play well in preseason, and we saw Kenny Wangu play relatively well in the preseason as well. I mean, it's like we have the depth. So I don't necessarily think that you need to rush the decision here. What's more important is if we can, again, if we can continue to stack these wins and get to a point where we're, you know, we're a playoff bound, and to have a healthy Cook there is way more important than have a healthy Cook against the Saints in week, you know, four. So I'm on the side of just kind of sitting him and letting him rest that up. But again, to Dave's point, if it's not going to actually end up healing, if you don't actually heal it without surgery, it's going to be the same in a week from now, and 2 weeks from now, and 3 weeks from now. Now, sure, it's less painful because, yeah, I mean, I actually have dealt with a similar injury where my shoulder's popped out like twice, and I've never gotten surgery for it. It just kind of, every now and then it does hurt, you know, when it gets bumped pretty good and things like that. So again, not to the same magnitude. I don't have 300-pound defensive lineman tackling me and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, this is why you have depth at positions, and I think that we have the depth to be able to handle in absence of him. And honestly, Dalvin was a pretty integral part of the offense last week, but the running back has been the running back hasn't been like the most important position, like on this offense, right? That's what Collar was talking about earlier, where everything ran through Dalvin in the past. We don't really do that anymore. I mean, Dalvin got his last week, and he was a very integral part of that win. And Alex Mattison was also an integral part of that win. But like week one, I know Dalvin ran for 90 yards, but I, like I said on the show, that after that win, I didn't even notice because the big plays were coming from everywhere else, and it was more of grinding plays. And if you just need grind plays, Madison can do that. Chandler can do that. Just grind, get 4, 5, 6 yards, get yourself in good field position and down in distance positions.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. And I do wonder, you bring up a point about the Vikings offense, and it's not that Dalvin Cook has been ineffective when he's played. He's been efficient outside of maybe the Eagles game, and they've addressed those comments. But I know we've talked about it before on this show as well, but maybe Kevin O'Connell's offense is just a slight variation of the Rams, who are very comfortable using a running back by committee, because I've even noticed the timeshare between Madison and Cook seems a little bit different than it had been in the past. Like, I think Madison has come in to spell Cook through 3 games more often than I have seen in previous seasons. Mm-hmm. So barring whether or not, you know, Cook is actually going to be healthy or not, I'll be curious to see if that continues, or if Cook doesn't play, how does Kevin O'Connell use the 3-headed, you know, backfield of Cook, Chandler, and Wangu? So it's just something to keep an eye on, because to your point, yeah, they are not featuring the running back. This is not Mike Zimmer. This is not, you know, the Kubiaks. This is Kevin O'Connell, and he's going to pass probably more than he runs. So,
yep.
Any final thoughts before we head over to the lightning round, Ryan?
No, just, and Dave, I think you'll like this, man. And I already briefly mentioned it. This offensive line's looking pretty darn good, and it's a breath of fresh air to see. Again, I'm really happy that Darisaw is panning out for, like, you know, again, my prediction of, like, I think he's the second best tackle in this class, and Slater's still probably proven to be the top guy, actually. But I don't think Darisaw is much far behind him, and he might be ahead of Penei Sewell. I don't know. You know, Penei Sewell looked pretty darn good against us last week too, against Danielle Hunter. But like, hey, you got 3 stud tackles from this class, and we got the one that was picked 26th?
If I remember correctly, it was right around
26. Yeah, it was, I know it was late. But yeah, I mean, and so we got the one that didn't cost us the top 10 pick. So right,
we dropped back.
So that's pretty awesome. So outside of that,
part of that part of that is Kevin O'Connell. Part of it is our offensive line coach. But with Kirk Cousins more in shotgun, that gives Garrett Bradbury more time and room to set up, right? His pass blocking grades have improved. I've also noticed some techniques-driven stuff improving. That comes from the line coach. The shotgun comes from Kevin O'Connell. You throw two decent guards there with Ezra and Ed, and Ed's average, a rookie, right? Who's learning, and he generally doesn't make the same mistake twice. He may have a bad game, and he may make mistakes, but you usually see that fixed. Next game, it's a different mistake, right? But he's learning, and the fact that he's a rookie playing in his first year against very veteran and very good defensive tackles, it's a good thing. And having those three play together, the two bookend tackles that are playing fantastic, yes, the offensive line is looking better, and it warms my heart just as much as this bourbon.
Love it.
Oh,
love
man.
It.
All right. Well, I didn't go back and do a recap of the over-unders last week. I did watch it, but I just didn't do it for the pregame. So I have no idea how you did last week, but we'll just dive
in. We all won.
Did you?
Yeah.
On your over-under picks?
I have no idea.
Yeah. See?
Dave. I said under. I think all of us said under on Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think we all said under on DeAndre Swift, which I think is accurate for both of them. I don't think St. Brown at like 70 yards receiving.
Yep.
Dalvin Cook, I think we said I think I said over, so I was wrong on that one.
I did too.
Jefferson on targets, I said over. I think everyone else said under, so I was wrong there. So. We did okay.
Well, let's see if you can do better this week. Dave, we're getting good at that timing. And sorry, I've been muting myself all night. I'm coming down with something, so apologize if I have to mute again. We'll start with some over-unders, buy, sell, then predictions. It's lightning round here on Vikings Happy Hour. Ryan. The first one for you is the Vikings defense with 1.5 interceptions. You taking the over or under? Caller pointed it out. If it was Winston, it might change things. And so we're gonna play this one as Jameis Winston is playing.
I think I'm still gonna just do the under. Our corners I don't think are like playing with a ton of confidence right now, and just the way that they're playing defense right now, it seems more shell-like. And sure, that can turn into some interception opportunities, but it just doesn't seem like they're coming plentiful right now. So I'm gonna say the under.
Okay. Dave, what about you?
If it's Winston, over.
Okay. I will say Winston has thrown 2 interceptions in his last 2 games. So I think I'm going to go the over 2 if Winston plays. Adam Thielen, 95 receiving yards. Over or under?
Gosh, I think
under.
Oh, go ahead.
Dave says under.
Because I think Justin Jefferson's going to have another big game.
Okay.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same. I think Jefferson, I don't think he's going to have an explosion Green Bay game, but I do think he comes back to a little bit more of a normal cadence of what he typically would do. And I think KJ Osborne also has an opportunity to actually have a decent game as well. So I think the ball is going to get shared a little bit more enough where Thielen wouldn't have enough to get 95.
I'm going to go with the over on this. And So last week, I feel like the plan was for the Vikings to kind of feature KJ Osborne. When you look back at the tape, there's a lot of play designs strictly drawn up for him. I feel like that was supposed to be the Eagles game for Adam Thielen, and it just didn't pan out. So I think they might give him another chance this week while all the attention's still on Justin Jefferson. So I'm going to go over with Adam Thielen this week. The other one for over-under is 24 points by the Vikings offense. They're averaging 19.6 points a game this season. Granted, it's slightly skewed. It's only 3 games, but
yeah.
Still.
I am. this is honestly one of the better defenses we'll play, right? Like, I mean, in terms of the three that we've seen. But for some reason, I'm just feeling like we're in London. People, you know, legs are going to be tired, different time zone. I think that's advantage offense. So I'm going to go with the over.
Okay. Okay. Dave?
Over.
Oh, and yes, yes. If you're still here watching this or listening to it, you can tweet at us and tell us what you think your over-unders are going to be for this game, or just chime them out in the chat. I'd love to hear what you guys have to think. So you both say over on the 24 points. I was going to look, and I didn't go
See,
back.
See, I'm not that worried about the Saints' defense as a whole like you guys sound. I do worry about their offensive line and how they double-team them.
I
still think it's. I think this is going to be where Kevin O'Connell, right? We featured JJ in the first game, and then JJ's been shut down. And in the last game, we're getting more Adam Thielen and KJ Osborne involved. Running game, see more around it. I think Kevin O'Connell and his whole plan is getting more cohesive on how to spread the wealth and how to change it up, and Kirk knowing where to change reads. You know, if Justin's double or triple, then he instantly knows to switch and look for AJ or for Adam or KJ, and the running game mixed in. I think it's a better all round, and I think we get more production.
Yeah, I was gonna go back and look and see what the Vikings averaged in London. Not that it really matters, but I feel pretty confident that they'll score more than 24 points this weekend, so I'll take the over as well.
And you're saying 23 and a half or 24 and a half? Probably 23
23 and a half, yeah. I probably should have changed that, but you know what I'm saying.
You know what's funny is the betting line right now, we're
46, minus three. Right?
Well, we're minus three with a betting line. Over-under is 43 and a half, so that would be essentially – 23-20 would be like a winning game for us, where, you know, we're just hitting the thing. So that wouldn't make us over. So, but I think we do go over.
All right. So let's switch over to buy sell quick here. We've talked about these first two, you know, throughout these shows, but we'll give it a whirl again. Are you buying or selling Kevin O'Connell's play calling through three games? I think I did this a couple weeks ago too. You're buying it?
Mm-hmm.
Any particular reason why?
Again, just watching the game, being there live and watching guys run open and winning their reps, as well as on the playback when I do watch it on from home. It just seems like the play calling is there. The execution isn't always there, and that's okay. You know, we're still learning this offense, but I think the play calling is there.
I think you call out a very good point. I do believe as well that the play calling is good. I think it's the execution and the newness of this offense that's led to some poor performances. I mean, they scored 24 points in two out of three games, so I'll take that most weeks. But I would agree. I'm buying it as well, Dave. How about yourself?
Well, I'm buying it, but I think, like I alluded to before, I think the play calling is getting better. He's learning more how to round it and use all the tools available and maximize those tools when possible, and bring in the team that way.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to fine tune it. And as he fine tunes it, the offense is going to produce more and more. And I think we're on that track, which is the track we want to be. That,
yeah.
And throw in the whole gutsy win. We're not going to lose deal from last week. I think that helps. So I still buy it. I like.
All right. KOC. We'll stick with you right off the rip here, Dave, for this next one, just because, yes, I know your answer. But are you buying or selling the offensive line?
Buying. It's the best line we've had in 10 years.
10 years. Well, I guess 2012. Who was on that offensive line? Well, Khalil.
Lodeholt.
Lodeholt
was right tackle. You had, I'm trying to remember who was left.
Sullivan at center.
Dixon still there. You had Sully at center.
Sullivan was at center. Herrera, maybe?
Herrera was over at right guard, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm. Was Berger in there?
2017 probably graded out better, but that was just because that was a magic season and how what's-his-face played. And it was I'm happy. I'm very happy and getting happier by the week.
Ryan, I think I know your answer. You kind of gave us a little bit of a sneak peek on this one. So I think I'm buying it as well. Bradbury is playing pretty well with some competent guard play next to him. We got two bookend tackles for the foreseeable future. So things are looking up on the offensive line. We can thank Rick Spielman that he gave us that on his way out the door. My last one for you guys here. Are you buying or selling the Vikings run defense? And this one is a little bit of I'm kind of leading you in a weird direction, because when you watch them, you wouldn't believe that the Vikings run defense is very good, right? We've kind of been gashed through three games. But according to PFF, and I know that's not the end-all be-all, but according to PFF, they have the sixth-ranked run defense.
That blows my mind.
So,
what does DVOA have?
What are you buying or are you selling this Vikings run defense?
I'm not buying anything on defense. I'm sorry. Yeah. And until I think we get into year two of this defense, I'm not going to buy anything on this defense. I don't really trust it.
I was floored when I saw that they were ranked sixth, and I would love to talk to our former friend, not former, but former PFF friend, Eric Eager, just to figure out how, why that's even a thing. But I am selling it. We talked about it on Vikings Hot Take last night. This Vikings defense is due for a rebuild as soon as this season is over. So I would just be prepared for that. Know that there is more pain probably to endure as the season progresses with this defense. But not that there can't be bright spots, which there certainly have been, but they have not allowed a fourth quarter touchdown this season through three games. And so
that,
but
not right,
Dave. You're laughing tells me that you're selling this.
Yeah. As we demonstrate on Saturday with me and Darren, when we go over the bulk stats, and like we say, we've only got three games. We're small sample size right now. So you got to take them with a grain of salt. But we compare PFF, DVOA, and then the normal Elias Sports stats, which are your box score that you see on ESPN, NFL Network, and stuff like that. They're not your advanced stats. They're the stats we've always had. And there's differences. And if you say PFF says we're six in rush defense, I just looked up Football Outsiders and their DVOA has us 31st in rush defense. So there is a ginormous discrepancy there.
Cue the tweet.
Yep. So this is going to be, I think this game for the rush defense is going to be telling, because we're going against Alex Kamara, right? And we know he gashed us before. And they like to use heavy offensive line sets where they're double teaming guys, where they have multiple double teams, because they'll keep in at least one tight end, if not two, and they're going to be taking up those linemen. How they do Sunday is a big test. Yes. I want to see it. I want to see Dalvin Tomlinson. I want to see Phillips, I want to see our ends. I want to see the linebackers choose the right gaps, and I want to see them stop Alvin Kamara. And they're right.
I think just another PSA here. PFF is not the end-all be-all, and I think it's just important to note that.
None of them are.
For fans that, yes, none of them are. But for fans that really go by PFF after a game, on the weekend, reel that in, because we're seeing two drastic things on one statistic. So, all right, let's do our predictions here and then call it a show. The records on the season, myself, I'm 2-1. Miles, 2-1. Ryan, 2-1. Media guest,
2-1.
Dave took a sacrificial loss last week.
But I actually thought we'd blow that one. Yeah. I was wrong.
Oh, okay. Dave is 1-2. So we'll get Miles's prediction sometime this week before the game. But I'll go first, and then I'll toss it to you, Ryan, because we already heard Matthew Coller. He thinks the Vikings win no matter what quarterback starts. I'm also going with a win. I feel I keep saying it. I know I got roasted in the comments last night for Vikings hot takes, but I still think this Vikings offense has an explosion in them. And I don't know if it's going to be in London or if it's going to be in Chicago, but it's one of these weeks coming up. I just know it. It's going to be huge, but I'll reserve myself this week, and I'll go with a modest 27-24 victory over the New Orleans Saints in London.
Right. Very good. I have a slightly larger, it looks like me and Mary are on the same wavelength here. I have a slightly larger win for us. I'm going to say 27-17 gets us to that money line. And
All right.
It's a little bit on the spread of, you know, the -3 or whatever. I'm going away from that, but I'm sticking to the over under on total points. So,
okay. Dave,
I'm taking the Vikings. I think it's around 10 points. I hope it's something like 31-21. Well, actually, I hope it's something like 31-17. But okay. I think the offense is, I agree with you. They're due for an explosion, and I think that's all part of the rounding of how KOC is calling, where we're going to mix it up. Not just, we're going to take advantage of JJ if he's wide open. We're going to take advantage of Adam Thielen and KJ. If they're open and JJ's covered, we're going to take the Ben Ellison at the intermediate route. I think that all that's coming together, right? They're getting more comfortable with it.
Yes. So they can. My only fear is that it happens and then we go to our bye week. And then that's, we kind of lose that momentum.
A few games out.
So. I know. But that's just my ultimate fear. So, thank you guys for joining this evening. Everybody in the chat, thank you for chiming in. If you have not yet, like I mentioned earlier in the show, please go and follow, like, subscribe, turn on notifications for the Climb in the Pocket YouTube channel. We're here every Wednesday at 8 p.m. We'll be back next Wednesday. Miles will be with us. We'll see on a guest. It's always week to week, but there will be a guest in some form or fashion. Whether that's just prediction or joining us for the whole show. With that being said, Dave, I'll let you clue the fans in on what's next, and we can put a wrap on it.
What's next is Darren and myself, two old bloggers, will be here Saturday, 4 o'clock, breaking down that game in London. I'm sure Darren will get his chance to talk Detroit as well. But we'll be looking at how we can win and how we're improving and, you know, maybe go for some fish and chips or something like that. Who knows? And then, of course, on Sunday, we have the game at 8:30 in the morning, Central Time. We will right be now live with the final score at the 2-minute warning in the fourth quarter. Come join us. We are the first post-game show in the Viking sphere of video. So join us. We've got the best takes, and you'll have fun. And I'll probably be 3 or 4 beers or more in by the time we get.
Let's go. I love it. Let's do it.
What do we say, guys?
Skull Vikings.
Skull Vikings. Thanks for watching. Like, subscribe, and ring the bell. And rate us on your favorite aggregator. And a special shout-out goes to our partners, the Daily Norseman, where the best Vikings content can be found. And to Lake Monster Brewing, home of the best beer in Minnesota. Skol, everybody.